All right, 3, 2, 1, bam. You're awake.
None of that works, so instead we'll talk about what the heck is up with McLaren and why is that working. Hello, JJ, and welcome to episode 456 of We Were Gamers, a podcast now only about F1 because Michael's not here.
Yes, haha, we've done it.
He'll be here in a bit, but...
Yeah, so he'll be here soon.
Constructors is literally out of everyone's reach, probably already?
No, it's definitely not, but it would require... Like, you forget, like, we're not even at the halfway point of the season.
That's true. The summer break is two races away. One race? Two races?
Yeah, two. One?
Yeah, anyway, we haven't talked about close. F1 in a while. Basically, since the end of last season, we didn't talk
but
about F1.
It's basically going to require... And the summer break, the teams don't work on the cars during that time either. It's, like, enforced.
They're not allowed, yeah. No yeah, everyone gets so, a break, yeah.
Basically, like, it's going to require McLaren to, like, screw up real bad and a bunch of teams to make big jumps.
Well, you know, well, the last time a team was this far out in front of everybody was obviously the Red Bull dominance of a couple years, the last couple years, before last year, basically, when they started to fall off. But the last time this happened, everyone was kind of like, are they cheating? Are they cheating? Are they cheating? I haven't heard that about McLaren, really. I don't know if that's a Zach thing or if it's more of a maybe the cars are just so similar thing. I don't know.
It's definitely a you haven't been paying attention thing. People have been accusing well, I don't know that there's been like direct accusations of cheating, but there definitely have been people accusing McLaren of doing stuff that isn't allowed and then the FIA checking and being like, nope, all good.
Yeah, so that, I think, is the thing of, like, there's been a whole lot of nothing. A whole lot of,
yeah.
Not there was that whole... I think media speculation was the thing with Red Bull's run, which was like, I don't know, these sound like credible things, versus now where it's like, the teams are complaining, but none of it's making it really super deep into the media.
Yeah, like, there was that whole thing about flexible wings, and everyone thought, oh, that was why they were so good, and then they... banned them and changed them starting from whatever race it was this season, and it had literally no effect whatsoever on McLaren. McLaren 1-2'd that race after they changed that, so it was like, okay. There were a bunch of people accusing McLaren of doing some kind of like tire magic, basically. They're saying that they're cheating somehow with the tires. Someone accused them of somehow running water through the interior of the drum of the tire, like the brake drum, to like cool the tires.
No, you don't want to cool the tires.
Yes, you do. In a lot of cases, right? You don't want your tires to overheat. That's just as bad as them being too cold.
Yeah, but they work so much to get them to be the correct heat. You know, like in the driving sense, doesn't make sense to then cool them off.
Well, you know, in theory, you could turn whatever this... Anyway, it doesn't exist, so people are talking like, oh, they're using water somehow to cool the tires or whatever, and like...
I'm just saying, if you're going to come up with
theories were floated,
yeah.
The FIA was like, no. Like, basically, people were like, if we did this, would it be illegal? And the FIA is like, yes. And like, if we did this, would it be illegal? Yes. If we did this, would... Like, you know, trying a bunch of different ways... And then they're like, is McLaren doing those things? And he's like, no. So it's like, all right, like, what are you guys complaining about, you know?
I really feel like if you're going to theorize or conspiratize about people cheating, that you got to come up with something that makes some sense. Running water through the tires doesn't make a lot of sense.
Through the brakes, right?
So the brakes need cooling 100%. Well,
it would serve two purposes, right? It would cool the brakes at the same time while heating the tires, because then the hot water goes back through the tires. So it was like, it was a clever idea, but it's not legal, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, that would be a clever idea, cooling your brakes with water. Yeah.
Yeah. The FIA said it's not allowed.
Why would it be?
The best one.
Water
that
all over the track.
Yeah, sure, right? Like, that's just, like, you know, a slight bump on the tire, and there's just see, like, water spilling out, right? Like,
yeah.
The coolest one I saw was that they were using phase change materials. Have you heard of these? So this is, like...
No.
This is, like, fancy material science, basically, that's, like, a material that's solid at a certain temperature, but then melts at a higher or lower temperature, depending on how you design the material. And, you know, it's encased in some kind of webbing or something that, like, holds it in there. But, and then you tune that transition temperature that doesn't change the temperature of the material, but it, like, you know, when it changes from the liquid to the solid, energy is used. And so then the heat in the tire or the brake or whatever goes down. It's like fancy material science, right? Like, you know, like the, when you heat boiling water, it can only heat up to a certain point, after which it just becomes steam.
Yeah.
So this is like the same idea. I love the fancy theory, complicated materials.
Yeah. Like, how much money do you think McLaren has?
I mean, they spend millions of dollars on these cars. I'm sure someone could hire a genius material science engineer and create these things. Like, these materials exist. Like, people know about them, but
sure,
people
but you
generally
crash
think
at
that
one
they
time.
Are, generally, people think they are banned, and so they're not used. So then, like, you know, people are like, are they using those? It's like, no.
Yeah. I've always kind of been a evangelist for how good a driver Verstappen is. And it's interesting to see McLaren have a 1-2 lockout at the top. And guess who's number three, right? It's Verstappen.
Unless he gets crashed out by Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah. There's a lot of times in this sport that I'm really kind of like, how do you not punish people for stuff?
I mean, he is getting a penalty, right? So he had a bunch of points on his license, and he's going to get a grid penalty next race. But the funny part was, like, you know, Max always is super mad when stuff doesn't go his way. He was, like, very kind and generous about this after he was the one who got crashed into. He's
is
like,
it because
oh, yeah.
Kimi is brand new to this level of the sport, and it was
I
just
think it has
that.
To be, right? Like, he's a young kid, and, like, Max was a young kid, and he knows how it is. And it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, everyone's done this. No big deal. Even though it, like, completely wrecked his race.
Maybe it's just because him and Kimi probably have, like, the same mentality about how to race, that he's, like, game, recognize game sort of thing.
Could be.
They're both
kind of
barnstormer drivers, right? You know, just, like, can't be in the back kind of guys.
The famous racing quote from whoever that guy was that's like, you know, if you see a gap and you don't go for it, you're no longer a racing driver. Something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's probably Art and Senna, right?
Yeah, that does sound like a Senna thing.
I just feel like the Red Bull car must be so much worse than people know. Like, if he's in... 100%,
that's right.
If he's in third and the other Red Bull car is in 17th, and obviously Yuki Tsunoda is not the answer, right? Like,
right, yeah.
He never was at RB, and he never was going to be at Red Bull, and they're done with this experiment, right?
And I think, you know, I think what it is it just proves that car was always undrivable. And then in retrospect, like, it makes Perez look really good, right? You're like, oh, Perez sometimes got like 10th. You're like, whoa, he must actually be way better than we thought.
Well, Lawson had trouble with the RB when he moved up last season, too.
That was this season still?
Oh, my God. Well, no, he moved up to the end of last season, didn't he?
No.
Like, a few races?
That was this season. Yeah, he moved up this season.
Oh, my God.
He started there this season.
He started there this season, and then they moved up
like
Yuki,
five
and
races,
neither
they,
one of them can... Neither one of them can drive the car.
I think it's just very clear that you are 100% right. Like, that car is completely undrivable if your name is not Max Verstappen.
If
you put him in a better car, he would be like mega first somehow.
Well, if he were in a Mercedes, maybe.
Yeah. So that's the hot rumor that's been flying around the paddock and being reported by all the F1 gossip sites. That Toto Wolff and Max's people have been talking. And it is known that it's been reported on by a bunch of, like, respected F1 journalist type people that Max has a clause that he can activate in his contract that will get him out of the, like, giant extension he signed to Red Bull when he can be a free agent.
Yeah. I imagine that means he is being gracious to Antonelli for two reasons then, because they ain't going to kick Antonelli off. He's been doing great.
Well, Antonelli has a contract, right? Like, notably, George Russell does not for next year.
Bye-bye, George.
I think that's like, you know, that has to be what's going on, right? Is Toto is going to pursue that until it's dead, and then when Max... if Max says no, which I kind of feel like he's not going to say yes, then George all of a sudden gets a 3-year extension or whatever, right?
Do you think Max will stick around with Red Bull?
The question is, would he rather, and maybe, you know, who knows? I don't know. But would he rather have the team that is catering to his whims, or would he rather be on a team that maybe isn't catering to his whims as much, but might be better?
I mean, not to throw too much shade, but I'm seeing Alex Albon sitting there in eighth place in a Williams.
Yeah, dude, that Williams is looking pretty good, man.
Max could have a choice of a lot of good cars, is all I'm saying.
Like, well, the other thing is that, you know, the rules change big time next year.
That's right. You know, the new engines, there's, right?
There's new engines. There's new aerodynamics changes.
New teams. You know,
new teams, yeah. Cadillac comes in, right?
And so, Kick Sauber changes over to Audi.
To Audi officially, yep. I don't foresee that going well based on current trajectories.
You don't think Nico's gonna save Audi from themselves?
No, I don't think they've said Nico is gonna be racing for Audi.
It's just silly because they moved him to Kick Sauber to be ready for Audi.
Yeah, I'm making the shrug motion here. I don't know, man.
Yeah, Bortoleto's got to go.
Yeah, I don't think Colapinto's
going to go.
They're talking about Colapinto might go this season, and they'd replace him with Bottas. It's like desperate for anyone who isn't horrible.
Well, maybe they should have kept Ocon. Ocon's sitting in ninth.
Yeah, I mean, in a Haas, right? Like
in a Haas.
I think the issue with Ocon...
Who's the guy that came into Alpine last year, the kingmaker, quote-unquote?
Flavio Briatore.
Flavio clearly is the problem here, right?
He's definitely the one who's recalling all the shots, for sure. Whether he's a problem or not, I don't know. I guess, you know, he famously is one of the people who ordered his driver to crash in that...
allegedly, JJ.
I think he got suspended for it, so pretty, that's a pass allegation.
It's funny because I'm pretty sure in my time watching F1, I have seen strategic crashing, not into other people, but like crashing to cause red flags.
Absolutely.
Pretty clearly.
In Monaco, like 2 or 3 different times. I can't recall it a ton of times other places, but I know I've seen it in Monaco more than once.
Yeah. Hamilton's Ferrari go is not seeming to be panning out for many first places.
Yeah, certainly not. But he and Leclerc looked pretty good this last race, right? They were 3-4 after McLaren's 1-2, so, you know.
Yeah. But how long do you think Hamilton sits behind Leclerc at Ferrari happily?
I don't think Hamilton has that many more years in him, to be frank. You know, if he does one more year with Ferrari, you know, okay, but I can't imagine they're giving him like a 3-year contract even, right? You know, I know Alonso is older than him and still in the sport, but like, you know, come on.
Yeah. Well, I think this season's been pretty good, especially for people that are fans of not Red Bull. I think it's definitely still, despite, you know, the fact that Max probably will not... I mean, there's still time after the summer break for him to pull into the driver's standings.
Yeah, I think it's a case of...
It's not over.
You know, if they can start turning it around so that Max can compete with the McLarens and start pulling off a bunch of seconds or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he won't win the championship, but he would be a contender for a second or something, you know?
Yeah. It would be a big boon for his legacy as a driver. Is all I'm saying. It to be in very clearly a bad car.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But I think since we're talking about driving bad cars, we could talk about my attempt to drive a very bad deck this last week. Hi, Michael. How you doing?
Hi, friends. I've just been listening rapt to the rundown of F1.
Oh, I think we could go on for the entire hour about
I'm
F1.
I'm sure you guys could turn it into an F1 pod.
I have been strategically holding back. We talked about it too much last season, I think. It was like every week. And like the week-to-week drama is great. But the seasonal, I think, this year, again, it's, you know, another team is sort of sitting at the top this year. So it's kind of more of a, let's talk about it every once in a while.
I will say, despite the team sitting at the top, there was a lot of good drama for the 1-2 race, like these last couple races, like Lando and Piastri going at it, like really getting in there and like fighting with each other. So at least
very
if it's
unusual.
Be a 1-2, it's at least, you know, an interesting 1-2.
It's unusual that these guys are allowed to race. They're just not allowed to crash. It's like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very funny quote from I watched Drive to Survive finally, which actually was not very great this past season. It was kind of y'all kind of know all the drama ahead of time and the contract drama and all that sort of stuff, which is a problem ahead already. But it just didn't seem like it seemed very disjointed and it didn't seem to be telling a very good story. At the beginning and through the end, and it was just a kind of a mess. But that's where I think Flavio does not look very good as a team principal, and it also kind of lets you pull back a little bit and say, oh, okay, maybe this stuff is bigger, you know. But I want to pull back a little bit on Magic too, JJ. Now, I don't want to not talk about it more, but I do want to take a wider look at how you feel about the set as a whole, as we get ready for 1 month of just Final Fantasy towards the next set, which is Space, and how you've been doing in drafts and stuff. Because I think I'm on my sixth or seventh draft that there are deck archetypes in this draft that work, and there are a lot that don't. And it's a narrower meta than I thought, despite there being a lot of good cards that will probably make their way into Standard. And we got to talk about those bans too.
Well, I'll go ahead and tell you, the only card so far that has made its way into Standard is VV. Nothing else, basically, tournament level wise.
Right.
That Michael was before VV. The bans, of course. Maybe after the bans, a couple more creep in.
You know VV Michael, right?
FF9. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
so
my boy.
So I can't remember all of his abilities off the top of my head. Let's see. If you cast a spell, he gains...
It's a non-creature spell.
Non-creature spell, he gains power, right?
Okay.
No. Well, yes, but not in the way that you're... He gets a +1/+1 counter when that happens.
Right.
And
okay.
He deals
and
one damage to the opponent.
Yeah, and then he deals one damage to the opponent. Their body damage, not creatures. So already pretty good there, Michael, considering he's, what, 3 mana?
He's a 3 mana 0/3, so he has no power to start with, but...
But you cast one spell, one mana spell, and he's now a 1/4.
And that's
a
pretty decent rate for a 3 mana card.
Once per turn, Michael, what if you just had extra mana to cast more spells to make VV stronger?
You just keep stacking on 1/1 counters?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
you could just keep stacking those on if you could cast a bunch of cheap spells. And you know, like, having mana is hard to do and ramping's hard to do. But what if there was, like, some other card that could just, like, give you extra mana? Wouldn't that be good?
That feels good.
What if it was just the same card that also gave you extra mana? Wouldn't that be great?
So it's just self-sustaining then.
Once per turn.
VV's ability costs 0. It has a cost for some reason, which again is insane. Why?
I wonder if that's an interaction.
I guess. And then it produces mana equals to VV's power. So, yeah, if you use it while you haven't cast a spell, you get nothing. But as soon as you cast one cheap spell, now it makes 1 mana. And then, you know, you cast more spells, and it goes up and up and up, and then all of a sudden, it makes 5 mana now.
Now you're thunderbolting people's faces.
This feels very, very broken very quickly.
The standard meta seems to think so.
I think the other Final Fantasy card that's starting to penetrate now in the light of the bans is Cecil, the 1 mana black death touch guy.
Oh, right, that switches when you lose half your life?
Yeah, I don't know that you even care about the second part, although it's good.
Yeah, one mana, 2/3 death touch.
Is hot. And yeah, you lose some life or whatever when he deals damage, but he's not there for that. He's just there to sit in the way and basically be unkillable. And yeah, like, yeah. Or attack basically with unblockable, because what do you want to do? Lose your giant guy to this 2/3 one mana guy?
That also probably comes back later really strong. If you do, you know, like, I don't know. I have played a lot of games of draft. I haven't played much with the cards outside of draft, but it seems to me like white came out really strong, and Orzhov black white also very strong, red white very strong, lots of white being very strong. And also, if you don't include weapons or work your deck around weapons, it better be real tight otherwise, right?
Yeah, the red white weapons archetype in draft has been very good from my experience with it. I've only done like 3 drafts, although I did pull off a full victory in one of them, so I can't complain too hard.
Yeah, I've had a full range. I've had some 5-win drafts, I've had a 7-win, and I also had an 0-3 trying to do blue white, which was terrible.
Yeah, I feel like this happens every single set, right? They're like, they design all these archetypes every time. And they're like, oh, this like, you know, black-green is like graveyard reanimation or whatever. And you're like, okay. And you try to do that, and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, my best deck was black-red, actually.
I'm talking generally. And, like, just some sets, like, some of the color combos just aren't as good as the other ones. And that's just always the case.
Yeah.
And especially once the set's been out for more than a few weeks, everyone figured out what's good.
Well, if it's not going to penetrate standard, do you feel like maybe the theme of Final Fantasy is great for collectability and actually a decent amount of fun in draft because all the cards are Final Fantasy? And Commander will probably have a good amount of Commander cards. There's a lot of them that seem like they're made for Commander. But if it didn't penetrate standard because of the theming, right, like, maybe the next set, which will be more magic focused, even though it's spaceships, will penetrate standard better.
I think a lot of the issue with the penetration into standard were the extremely powerful cards from the ones that all got banned, right? Like, there was standard had become like a 3-turn format, basically, where, you know, you were dying on turn 3 to Cori Steelcutter. You were dying on turn 3 to Omniscience being reanimated. You were dying on turn 3 to, you know, these aggressive mice packages.
Yeah.
And that just kind of bullies out anything in the format that isn't just hyper-focused on whatever it is and can do it like immediately.
Removal. Yeah, removal, or nothing else. You got to play another fast deck.
Yeah, and also, like, it, not only fast, but it has to then be hyper-efficient because all these cards are, like, 2-for-1-ing you all the time, right? Cori Steelcutter, you can't remove it efficiently without spending 2 cards because it creates a monk, and then if you delete the monk, you still get the weapon, or you delete the weapon, you still have the monk.
Yeah, that's, I think, why weapons in Final Fantasy Draft are so strong. It's like, look at all these cool things that stick around the rest of the game, and also they come with a body, and they're cheap.
Yeah, exactly, and that's cool in the limited format, but then in standard, it's much harder to deal with efficiently, right? And efficiency and speed is the name of the game in standard. So with these bans, I think hopefully the format will have slowed down a little bit. You know, maybe now it's a 4-turn instead of a 3-turn, but that's a huge difference. You know, there's a ton of sweepers available at 4 mana, and hopefully that kind of stuff is going to move the needle a little bit more.
My infinite mice is doing pretty well in this new meta.
Hopefully you mean infinite rabbits, because I think the green mice all got banned.
Rabbits. That's what I meant. Rabbits.
Yeah. So, you know.
Dude, Elspeth Stormslayer is a really good card, man. I gotta say.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. It turns out it was good in standard. Before the Cori Steelcutter came in. So, you know.
It's probably going to be coming back.
Yeah. You know, to some degree anyway. But yeah, it's a strong card. And definitely, Final Fantasy is going to be in Standard for a long time. So I think we haven't seen kind of the final form of which cards are going to be good, given that we're going to have multiple more years ahead of these cards being around.
Can you do a Planeswalker ability only as a sorcery?
Unless it tells you you have the ability to cast them some other way.
Like using the loyalty token to do the ability on a Planeswalker is a sorcery, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a, like, things that trigger on sorceries won't trigger on it, but yeah, it requires it to be your main phase and you to have priority.
Okay, got it. All right.
You can cast the thing as Flash, and then there's a whole thing.
Yeah, well, we started talking about a video game there, which is Final Fantasy, and I don't think Jotun is very much of a fantasy-style game, but I think we still need to hear how it's going.
I think it's fantastical.
Okay.
So we talked a little bit about it last week, but that was, you know, my homework assignment was, I don't know what to call it, a homework assignment, my second suggestion.
Yeah, Hue from Michael, which was a color-based platformer, which was very quick.
And like, puzzle game, really, I would say. Okay. Like, platforming, right. Puzzle game. Yeah. And Jotun from you, Andy, was a Metroidvania combat boss rush kind of game.
Boss rush? Oh, that's right. There wasn't much combat outside of boss fights anyway.
There's a non-zero amount, but it is not a lot. And yeah, it's a, you know, it is kind of a boss rush type game. Really interesting the way, there's a lot of exploration, you know, finding these runes. And then once you get two runes in a specific area, it unlocks the boss of that area. You go fight the boss and then you get some kind of power, right?
Right, right.
You get the powers in the areas and use it against the boss typically. So, yeah. But I completed all the areas. I fought the final boss. Is it a spoiler to say the final boss is Odin in a Norse themed game? I don't feel like that's a spoiler.
I feel like that's probably the easiest guess if you're going to have to guess who's the big bad.
Yeah. You think you've got like one of two directions there, right? It's like, it's either Odin or Loki.
Right. Yeah. Depending on what kind of thing is going on.
Yeah, either you're on Odin's side and it's Loki, or like you're on the human side and it's Odin, or all of them.
Yeah, so I will say the boss fights are pretty tough, and especially as it keeps going, like they make them difficult. So even if you're getting all the upgrades, there's upgrades to extend your health bar in maybe every level or most levels. I didn't get all of them, but they definitely are in most of the levels. But they're kind of hidden. You got to explore around and try and figure out how to get, off to an island that you can't figure out how to get to, kind of thing.
Sure.
Okay.
But even with a bunch of those and most of the powers available to me, most of the bosses were pretty difficult. I definitely died. I don't think I ever beat a boss on the first try. Now, it didn't take me like 7 tries or something until we start getting to like the last boss, where it took me quite a few. But most of them were pretty difficult. And the combat, you know, you have this like this axe swing that's kind of very deliberate. And then you have like a charged overhead swing that does a bunch of damage. Man, the axe swing does like no damage. It doesn't matter what you're doing. So you basically have to use the charge swing if you want to deal like any reasonable amount of damage to the boss's health bar. So it's a lot of just like, okay, like, you know, trying to position yourself in such a way that you know where the attack is going to go. And then like, okay, I have like 2 seconds, 1, 2 charge attack, bonk, you know, kind of thing. And all of them are these like, you know, mythical creatures. So they're like 10 times taller than you. You know, you're like a little guy down by their feet kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was really fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. I got to the end. It unlocks a boss rush mode. Like, that's just like, okay, you did all the exploring stuff. You want to just like skip that and fight the bosses? Like, we'll just let you. Which is cool. But I did not want to do that again. Especially because I only barely won at the end. Like, it was a nail biter, you guys.
Yeah, well, if you do it once, you're done kind of thing, right? You know, it's like, all right, I'm out.
You're using up all the heals. You're using up all the invincibility frames. So you can just like, you know, they have one of those things that makes you like invulnerable for a little while. And you're just like, I'm just attacking during this. I don't have to, like, please die kind of thing. Yeah, it was really good. And yeah, I talked about the art before. The art is just really pretty, like very clearly like hand drawn and hand animated. It was awesome. It was a great recommendation. Thank you, Andy.
All right. Well, I'm glad it's as good as it looked from the outside, at least. I just kind of like had the fear, you know, it was not going to hold up to appearances.
And I think the shorter length is a benefit, honestly, especially for, you know, really? People on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Spend your time wisely.
It's very much bite-sizable. You know, it's like, okay, I'll do like one exploration land and then I can bounce out, or I can, you know, take a couple runs at this boss, and if it doesn't work, well, whatever. And it doesn't lock you into anything. You can just like leave and go somewhere else and do something else. If you, oh, I'm stuck on this boss, I'll come back, I'll do some exploration, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great fun.
Awesome. All right, so that's both of your games down.
Yeah, we're going to have to give you other assignments once we catch up.
So do you
feel
wanna...
like it's similar to last time, though, you know? Like, you got ahead of us a little bit. That's okay.
I was going to ask if you wanted to hear about my other assignment, because I dipped a toe in.
I do.
I was just about to.
Yeah. So my other game from you, Andy, was Sonic Mania. And so I got
notably
a little bit
on
time
sale currently.
Yes. Yeah. Along with everything else, because Steam Summer Sale. So yeah, I got to play a little bit, and you know, I think the thing that gets me with Sonic games. I think it's the momentum physics.
It is
the acceleration.
I'm not totally sure if I can say what exactly it is, except maybe it's always been the kind of thing that has always felt whenever I pick up a Sonic game, like the way that he moves and accelerates and like when he slows down and when he speeds up is just like slightly out of my grasp. Right, like if I'm playing a Mario game to give you a comparison point, right? Like I know how Mario moves, how he speeds up when I hold down the run button, how he slows down, how he stops and like goes back the other direction. And whenever I'm playing Sonic, I feel like it's always me chasing like how he moves to get the best out of the movement. I always feel like it's a game, you know, the line has got to go fast, but I always feel like it's a game where I'm just like constantly running into things and losing speed and getting stuck.
Uh-huh.
But are you just stuck, or do you just want to be going fast and it's not letting you go fast?
I mean, part of it is that I just want to be going fast, and maybe my own familiarity with the game gets in my way of doing that. But I also feel like, and this I have always felt, is that the non-linearity of it, which has always kind of been a hallmark of those games, right? Like there are four or five different ways to go to get through any level, always just leaves me feeling like, well, which way am I supposed to go? What's the best way to go? Or is it just you're supposed to go as fast as you can until you hit something and then go fast in a different direction?
See, the hit something is the part that I sometimes struggle with. And that's why I'm like, do I just not like the design of these games? And why I wanted to see other people's opinion. You get going so fast. It's like the point of this is for me to like jump and line up and do the thing. And then once I start going and I'm looping through upside down loop de loops and flying off in the air and all that sort of stuff. And then you're going so fast, you can't see what's coming right at a certain point. And there's no way to change direction when you're doing the Sonic thing. It's not like you can be like, okay, when I go off this jump, I'm going to hold up so that I go up higher. I'm going to hold down so that I make Sonic go down or whatever. It's just like Sonic goes off the jump and then level design says I run in smack into this wall.
Right. Or there's but a
I have never run the
spider yeah. that you can't.
But I've never run the level before, so now I've lost all my coins or whatever, you know, like but you can't run the level at low speed to learn the level because then you don't know where all the jumps are. It's just it's a type of level design that I feel like as I've tried and tried and tried to play Sonic I wonder if I just don't connect with. Like you said, a Mario game, you're running at a pace where you can understand what's coming. They build the levels so you understand as each level goes what you're expected to do, what things look like, what, you know, all these things are, and then they could trick you later by making things look like other things. But I don't know, with Sonic Mania, it was like, you played Sonic before, here, go.
Yeah, they've always just felt like games that reward you for playing the same level over and over and over again and memorizing the routes and the patterns. And I don't think that's the experience that I'm looking for out of it.
I think that's the nail on the head there. Like, I feel like the old, like, original Sonic games rewarded you for memorizing the routes. And it's like, oh yeah, on Green Hill 1-2 or whatever, you break this one wall and then you get a jump and you're up on this like top zone and you can like jump over half the level when you're going at full speed or whatever. Like I feel like that's the stuff that I remember about Sonic, the early games. I haven't played Mania, so I guess I don't have a direct comparison there.
Yeah. Hmm. Good question.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe it's not for me. We'll okay. see. I might give it a little more time, but
I didn't give it to you as a trap. I gave it to you as a I think you do a lot of, I mean, you liked Ori, you've played Hollow Knight and a couple other games. It's not like you don't like things that scroll sideways. And, you know, Celeste is a big thing of yours. Sonic is not those games. But Sonic moves like those games, and I think that's what it trades on. And there's a lot of people that love Sonic, and it's weird to say something like, I don't think I like Sonic. So, you know, understanding if it was just Sonic Mania, understanding if it is something that we all like have grown out of. Like, I think it's an interesting experiment to try these types of games again at this point for more than one person.
Agreed.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, you know, that's part of getting older, recognizing that things aren't for us, right?
You know, it's funny because I just I got an email about getting that EGM book, the Electronic Gaming Monthly Compendium, the look back. And I don't know if it's part of the thing that it affects me where it's like I gotta control myself from like trying to collect everything. But I think also these magazines, we grew up at a time where the magazine told you the games that were good and the games that weren't. And if you didn't like all the games that were good and if you didn't try to play all the games that were good, you weren't playing the games. Versus, because that was of the age, right? You're not of the age to know, like, I tried this thing and it's okay for me to say I didn't like something that's good.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I think also there was an element of, like, there just weren't as many games, period. Right? Now, like, you just don't have to engage with entire genres if you don't like them or don't want to, because there's 10 million other games of the genres you do like.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, I could play RPGs from this day until I die and probably not play every single one.
Almost certainly.
Especially because they keep coming out every year.
Yeah, certainly.
Time, why do you keep going forward, please?
Well, if we're going to play more games before we die, JJ, someone's going to play a new one around here.
Oh, I guess that falls to me. Yeah, I have been playing a relatively new game. I talked about wanting to play it before, but I dug into Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You guys, how do the French rules. Do making a video game, man?
Yeah, oh, they're good. Okay. This is good. This game is rad. You guys should play it. It's okay. Awesome.
I'm booting up Steam right now to see what the sale amount is on this situation.
Yeah, maybe
pretty new, so
yeah, I would maybe hold on the sale situation.
I see.
Definitely put it in your idea hopper for stuff to go back to. You know, it's turn-based combat. It is a
love that.
It's an sure RPG. It's got leveling. Each character has unique systems, so that every character, like each character in your party, has like their own kind of thing going on in combat. One character wants to constantly be flipping back and forth between various stances. Another character builds up charges every time they attack, and then they have a different attack that they can unleash that does like a huge amount of damage when the charges get full. Another character builds up these like points based on the elements that she casts, and then when you have a full set of points, you can do different kinds of attacks based on what points you have and what colors they are.
Okay.
And those are just like the first few characters. You know, there are more that show up later, at least one more that I have, and their system's also totally different.
Really?
Yeah. And
I mean, like not even overlap, huh, to get you like training or anything?
No overlap whatsoever. All of them have all their own skills, all their own abilities, completely different. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're still attacking and damaging the enemies. Maybe, this character has an ability that inflicts burn, and then this other character has an ability that if they're burning, you get bonuses, right? Or this character will mark an enemy, and then this one deals bonus damage if they're marked, right? Mark itself deals bonus damage, so, like, you can kind of double dip there.
Teamwork.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it really feel, and then, you know, some of the customization abilities, they have these things called pictos that you can equip on each character that basically are like little abilities that trigger based on stuff that's going on in the battle. Oh, when you kill an enemy, you get 3 AP, right? And your AP is you spend AP to cast your skills kind of thing.
Okay. Do you get to keep that between, or is it just because it's turn-based, it sits in each combat? You got to build these things up.
You equip them per character, and then, you know, if you kill an enemy, that would trigger, and that character who has it equipped would get the bonus. After you've used it a certain number of times and won a certain number of battles with it, it becomes available to everyone. And so then you can say, oh, like, I can spend my points here and equip this ability on all my characters so that whenever I kill an enemy, everyone on my team gets this bonus, right? Or every time... You know, and the game has the, like, active style combat stuff of a Mario and Luigi. And beyond that, frankly, it's like...
You're like parrying and dodging in real time.
Absolutely, yeah. So when the enemy, when it's your turn, set the controller down, walk away, whatever. When it's the enemy's turn, you got to be locked in, dude. There's no time to waste. Keep paying attention. Because you need to jump, you need to parry, you need to dodge, you need to whatever the case calls for, right?
Okay.
But then you can have, I talked about those skills that you can equip. You can equip skills that trigger when you parry an attack, gain a bonus AP. When you parry an attack, gain a bunch of buffs. When you dodge, get a bonus, all these kinds of things. And it just becomes this really intricate puzzle of like, okay, I want to use this character to set up this other character so that the third character can do something else, and then... You know, when we dodge, everyone gets bonuses, or when this character dies, they give a bonus to the other people. And it's just like the combinations are endless. It really like sends your mind spinning into the amount of combinations of things that you can do in this game.
Love it.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, are you rewarded for finding newer combos? Are things hidden from you, or they tell you up front? Kind of like, oh, these are the characters you're going to always want together. Or is it more of like a, everyone could synergize pretty well. Just kind of got to figure it out.
So every character has a unique skill tree, right? So it's like, oh, this character has, you know, and they all sort of branch off in various directions. And you use your points from leveling up to pick different skills. So you can say, oh, I'll spec this, the mage person in like the fire damage direction. And then on this other person's tree, there are skills that either do fire damage or help with burning damage or, you know, that kind of stuff. So you can do those kinds of things. But also the game is like pretty generous with the items that allow you to respec. So if like you get to a point and you're like, oh man, I picked up this new weapon, but this weapon doesn't synergize with the build I have. It's like for lightning skills and the ones I've been doing are all for fire. Oh man, I can't use this. But you have like 15 of these respec potions sitting in your inventory. And like, it feels like every boss you beat gives you one or sometimes multiple. And so then it's just like, well, whatever, I'm going to chug one of these and now I'm a lightning character now today. Right. And so it's really like non-committal about just letting you try stuff out. And you know, you can always do the old, save, use it, try it out. If you don't like it, go back. Right.
Sure.
They're really not precious about that stuff. So yeah, I've been having like a really great time.
It means gets rave reviews, man. I mean,
yeah, shoot, I've been talking all about the combat and I haven't talked about the story, which is great too. Like I am into the story it's telling so far. I think it has a fun premise and it sets it up and now it's going places. You know, they don't hold your hand necessarily, which I think is a big problem a lot of RPGs have sometimes where they like kind of lay everything out for you, like pretty directly, exactly what's going on.
Yeah, not usually my cup of tea.
Yeah, and I don't.
I mean,
feel
I
that
want
way
something
so
in between. I want something in between obscure anime storyline and Western shooter.
So somewhere, you know, between here is exactly what's happening and Evangelion, right?
Yeah.
And we're definitely in that middle ground here. You know, they set up a bunch of really interesting ideas about the world and they kind of don't explain any of them. You know, there's kind of a lot of mystery about why things are like that. You know, you're going to stop the paintress and this, you know, this number that gets painted that causes people to die at that age. But kind of why any of that is completely unexplained. And, you know, what's going on here is like one of the central mysteries you're dealing with. You know, and so far, at least, they've been making some interesting moves, and I'm super curious to see where it goes. You know, so yeah, it's great so far. I'm really into it.
All right, well, this just got dragged way up my wish list.
I just moved it to the top.
Yeah, I'm playing on PC. It seems to run pretty well. I have it VSync limited to 60, so it's not like trying to, you know, run at 8,000 FPS or whatever. You know, it runs pretty good on my PC. I will say I can tell the like pre-rendered like cutscenes and stuff, you know, the like movies they play sometimes are definitely 30 FPS. I wish that stuff was like matched the frame rate that I was working at. Like it's kind of a nitpick, but no real like performance issues beyond that.
That's nice. I've been struggling lately with VSync or possible VSync issues of my own. I can't figure out why magic causes my screen to flicker black when effects happen in the game. I don't understand what's happening with that. I've tried a lot of different internet settings.
Is this on your phone or your PC?
No. PC, yeah. No.
Are you you're playing it through Steam?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Maybe try re-verifying the game files, and I know that's like the cliche thing, but
that's not a bad idea.
It And, you know, after that, go with God. I have no other idea.
Yeah, we'll verify some game files. Why not? Yeah.
Won't take but a few minutes, and then it's kind of all you got, all I got.
Yeah. If, in the meantime, people want to verify their game files, how could they ask for help with that?
They could send those questions to podcast@wewergamers.com. We'd be happy to help you out.
Okay, well, happily help me out right now, because I don't actually see verified game files anymore.
I think it's in there somewhere, under one of those menus, manage or something, maybe.
Yeah, I'm under manage, hide, mark, no, backup, browse.
I guess you can always uninstall and reinstall, but that's like maybe I'm not more effort.
Do that. I don't think it has anything to do with the installation. View integrity, verify installed correctly. There we go. We found
there
it. It's under installed files. We got it. We got it. YouTube, right?
Yeah. YouTube.com/@wewergamers. You can also find us on Facebook and Blue Sky.
I think I want to build an Esper. Tell us what?
Oh, I was going to say, tell us what game you're looking forward to on everybody's favorite upcoming holiday, SGDQ.
Oh my gosh, oh, yeah. It starts this week.
Sunday.
Sunday, the 6th.
Is it this
everybody
week or
should
next
watch.
Week?
It is this Sunday.
Sunday the 6th.
Dang. All right, heck yeah, man.
I love the summer one because I get more time with it.
Absolutely. I was looking at the lineup today. There's some good games in there.